Hoodoo plant mamas, get your soul fed and your spirit red.
This here is my strength. I possess the power from way back when. Back when folk were stripped from all of their kin, so they had to find the magic within. Ancestors gather my herbs, I conjure at my altar. Hoodoo plant mama, I manifest growth and I release trauma.
Child, we just out here trying to water our plants and mind our business, you know? Everybody ain't from the deep south, man. Everybody can't have culture like us.
Hey, y'all, and welcome back to another episode of Hoodoo Plant Mamas. I am one of your co-hosts, Lynn Nicole.
And I'm Danny B.
And before we get started, Danny B, how have you been?
I've been doing pretty good. I'm glad that the weather seems to be trying to improve. Spring feels like she's trying to fight back. Right now, it's right now she's down one. Like, it's giving 1-0 because for some reason it's 30 degrees today. And yesterday, I think it was in like the 60s. So that's cute. But I am happy to have more sunshine for longer amounts of time. So I think that's helping me a lot. What about you?
I am right alongside spring. I'm fighting for my life right now. It's like 40 some here, so it's also cold here, and the pollen is everywhere. I have just been sneezing, my eyes have been itching, I have been doubling up on eye drops and allergy medicine. I'm not having a good time.
Yeah, it is that time of the year as well, which is annoying, but I don't be outside, so unfortunately.
Oh. It's so nice, and like you said, the sun is out, so I try to go outside, but then it's like a mistake.
So, Leah, what are you feeling grateful for today?
There are actually like two things I'm super grateful for. One is there were a couple of people that reached out to us after our last episode. And both of them are like older than we are. And they both talked about how that episode made them feel less alone. And I was like, after hearing that, I'm just like, I feel like we're done. I feel like we did everything we needed to do. And so I'm just so grateful that like our experiences was able to help other people in that way. And then the second thing I'm grateful for is a couple of weeks ago, I had my book launch and there were like quite a few people that showed up. You showed up, and I'm extremely grateful. I told y'all then, and I'm going to say it again now, I'm extremely grateful for everyone who took the time out to come and celebrate me and my debut book. So what about you? What are you grateful for today?
You know, I'm grateful for that as well. I'm so glad there's so many Black people resonated with that episode and the fact that people sent us really sweet comments about it. I think it's kind of in line with just, you know, what's on topic, which right now I've been seeing a lot of talk about Black people getting fairly late diagnoses of autism. Like, a lot of them didn't get it until they were adults, but the signs have probably been there since they were very young. So I think it's an important conversation to have, and to also just kind of normalize it in a sense in our community, where people can stop being so afraid of being different or needing accommodations and things like that. So I'm super grateful for that. I'm super grateful that I've had like the energy and mental space to do a lot of reading. Like, in 2 weeks, I read 4 books. Well, actually, technically 5. I feel like I just been in it, like immersing myself in reading. And I think that's just what I need. And maybe I'm just in a space right now where I can consume, because I would struggle with 1 book for a month. Like, this just happened in the last few weeks, but I'm really thankful, and I'm gonna try to keep up the momentum for as long as I can. Like, I didn't purposely do that. It kind of just happened. I'm perfectly fine with maybe 1 book a week, 1 book every 2 weeks, but I'm also not going to slow down, because I think working that muscle is important. So Yeah, I'm grateful for that.
I'm glad you said that. I always feel so guilty about like reading a book, putting it down, and then I'm like, I'm ready for a new book. Like right now I'm between books and I'm so excited about the next one and I'm just trying to like pace myself. So I really need somebody to encourage me to be like, no, just keep reading.
Listen, sometimes that's just what we need, and it's helping me decrease my screen time because, I mean, this will be a part of our conversation, but social media is getting pretty fucking depressing. So yeah.
Well, we can go ahead and get started on today's topic, which I think is pretty big. For me, it's kind of impossible to even know where to start. Today, we wanted to talk about U.S. propaganda. And I think the U.S. is an expert when it comes to propaganda. And all of us have been brainwashed from the time that we are tiny to the time that we are now. Even if you're doing the work to try to unlearn a lot of what has been instilled in you, you realize just like how much has been instilled in you. And it has been more apparent to me when I see people talk about the things that they believe, and they believe them so wholeheartedly, especially when it's harmful. And I can see that it's colonialism, but to them, they're like, no, I just really, really believe this. That's the way that a lot of us have been socialized in this country. The things that we think are an extension of us are really just an extension of the U.S. empire. And I see it in me. And for me, I think it's looking at my beliefs, looking at the things that I think are immovable, and wondering why I think it's that way. In one way, I've been thinking about the ways that everything has been curated for us. You talk about social media. Recently, Meta did this thing where they automatically limited political content for everybody. I had to go in and change it. And they get to decide what political is. And a lot of times political can just be like talking about non-white people, talking about poor people or queer people or whatever. They get to decide what is political and what's not. And they get to limit the content based on that. And so something else I think about, we both talked about books, and I was thinking about bookstores and this illusion of choice, which I'm sure people have heard that phrase before. Illusion of choice is when someone gives you an option, you believe you have a choice between those options. But the reality is your choices are infinite. By being given options, you are actually being limited in what your choices are, because you can have an infinity of choices, but if somebody gives you five options, you think those are your only choices and that's all you can do. I hope that makes sense.
One way. The perfect example is the two-party political system.
Yes, exactly. So I've been thinking a lot about bookstores and kind of when you walk into a bookstore, and I'm talking about big chain bookstores. When you walk into bookstores, a lot of the books there are paid to be there. And a lot of bookstores have to follow a format about what books can be included, what books belong. And so you don't, when you walk into a bookstore, you do not buy what you want to buy. You buy what publishers want you to buy. And I found that like libraries and indie bookstores are a bit more democratic in that, especially libraries, a lot of times patrons get to be like, actually, I want this and I want that. I just found a really good book that I've never heard of before at the library because someone requested it. If it's like more of a chain thing, you're at the whim of somebody above you.
I want to add to what you said about people and like their beliefs, because it's weird too, because some people like they basically try to affirm their beliefs by saying, well, it's just a fact. Like it's just a fact. They do it a lot with gender. They do it a lot with sexuality, with all kind of different things. And it's sort of gets back to what you said about that illusion of choice. You have been given these two things and you believe that is the only way for people to exist in this world. And instead of like questioning it, it's like, no, this is what it is. This is science, da 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 da. And it's weird because niggas want to pick and choose when they want to listen to science. Because when the pandemic started, all of a sudden, everybody's a conspiracy theorist. Everybody lying. You know what I mean? Like the doctors don't know, the scientists, the researchers, they all in cahoots. So that's funny to me. But this conversation reminded me of a video. I hope this makes sense. a video where somebody was talking about an article that basically said, and I'm sure somebody racist wrote this, but they said being woke, basically people that are woke are more miserable. And I do think about that often, but I also don't think it's as cut and dry as that. And I think that goes back into that brainwashing and holding on to your beliefs, because it feels more comfortable and safe to just be like, this is what I was taught. I don't want to think about anybody else, anything else. I don't want to have to imagine that all of this shit is just wrong. And because it's traumatic. It is traumatic. This is how I feel about it. I think most people are miserable because we're living under capitalism. Whether you're conscious of what's happening in the world or not, I think people who genuinely want a better world, I think that we're better at carving out moments of happiness, like seeking happiness, versus people that devote their entire life to being hateful and trying to control people. Like I, even if those people are rich, and a lot of them are, a lot of them have a lot of power, I do not believe that they're happier, because there's no way you can be happy when your entire life is about restricting the rights of others, about just being angry about every, like being angry and hateful because certain people exist, because it's never going to be enough. It's never enough. And the way things are happening now, you can clearly see that it's never going to be enough. They got rid of affirmative action, and there's still people trying to figure out other ways to blame Black people for the fact that, like, they didn't get into college. It's like, what more do you want? I couldn't imagine living a life like that. Don't get me wrong, a nigga is miserable. A lot of us are. But I also feel the happiest when I'm in community, and I think that's really important. I also believe that the people who are not on social media are also the happiest. And contrary to what people think, I do think you can still be like an advocate and working towards the greater good without immersing yourself into the hellscape of social media. I believe it clears your mental space enough for you to really have time to reflect, to expand your imagination, because one of the things that has been really powerful about the US propaganda machine is how it has not only destroyed our sense of community, but it has like successfully limited our imagination. And when you limit people's imagination, it goes back to the choice. Like, they believe that this is the only way. Like, this is the only way to live, and anything else is wrong. Anything else doesn't make sense. And so, yeah, I hope that makes sense. I'm kind of rambling.
No, it made perfect sense. And it reminds me of, like, the things that we have been able to see in social media for the past few months, like Palestine and Congo and Sudan, and to learn about these things. I first learned about Palestine and Congo both in college. I learned about Palestine in 2014 from my friend who told me that Obama sanctioned for like bombs to be dropped in Palestine. We were both in elementary school when 9/11 happened. I don't know about you. I've been asking people about this, but in 2003, we had like a patriotism parade where we had to dress up in red, white, and blue. We had to, okay, you're looking at me weird. We had to sing songs about how much we loved America. These are things that we had to do like in school. Other people have been like, no, we didn't have that. But we had it in 2003. That was the kind of like world that I grew up in post 9/11. It was very much like, everything the U.S. does is right. Everything every other country does is wrong. Middle Easterners are wrong. They're bad. They're this, they're that. And I think with social media, we have been able to see people. And someone made the point that because a lot of the Palestinians that we are seeing are speaking English, it's causing people to have more empathy and more of a connection than if they were speaking Arabic. But because we are seeing people who are just like regular everyday people who are defenseless, who are powerless, and who are being relentlessly attacked, a lot of Americans are not listening to the US propaganda that these are terrorists who are out to kill everybody. Because we are seeing with our own eyes, these are defenseless people. And I think when it comes to foreign affairs, the US government has done a really great job of convincing us that there's someone overseas who is trying to take our freedom away. And we are so focused on this like terrorist, quote unquote, Middle Eastern person that we don't see how many of us are afraid that if we breathe wrong, the government will throw us in jail and strip us of our rights. And that is not freedom. Like, we are being held hostage, but so many of us refuse to believe it. We believe that somebody across the street is trying to get us when it's our own government.
This is why I absolutely hate election season. I think it's so many people who believe that they're on the right side of things, but just be loud and wrong. Even sometimes I'm surprised, like, people I actually respect who usually make sense, who usually know how to critique what's going on in this country thoughtfully, all of a sudden they just turn into like a cop during election season. Literally, this idea of good guys versus bad guys with the Republicans and Democrats, when they're all terrible, there's no such thing as a good politician. I'm sorry if some of y'all parents and family members are a politician. I do not think you can morally be a good person in politics. And I'm okay with being wrong, but that's where I am. Both the Dems and the Repubs, they all have the same agenda. Look at how they're coming together to try to ban TikTok. With this propaganda around China, look at how they're banding together against anyone who even insinuates that Palestinians are human beings. Like, grown ass people calling it anti-Semitic to raise money for hungry Palestinian children. It's almost incredible to see people like say that it's anti-Semitic to humanize even children at the bare minimum. We're talking about bare minimum. All of them should be seen as human. But the fact that you can make caring about children anti-Semitic is actually insane. The U.S. on both sides is backing that type of rhetoric. And it goes back to also them trying to convince us that what we're watching in real time is not actually happening. And then you have like the Vote Blue No Matter Who folks who are trying to guilt people into voting for Biden because Trump will be the end of all our rights. Mind you, affirmative action is gone under Biden. Roe was ended under Biden. If we want to talk about who got the power, the Supreme Court single-handedly has so much power. And right now, the people who want to restrict power have the most power in the Supreme Court. So there's that. But yeah, I think it kind of goes back to that limiting our imagination, convincing people that these are our only options and we should accept it. We should accept it. And a lot of people who mean well, who might call themselves activists and organizers, they fall into this trap of, this is all we got. We got to work with what we have. What if we imagined that we had something else? What if we create something else? A part of it, too, is a lot of fear. So you just take what you can get. They keep trying to throw all these bones. We want a ceasefire for 6 weeks. That's how you know they think we stupid. Like, they actually don't respect us at all. Because you really thought that was enough. Because they're so used, especially the Democrats, they're so used to throwing bones to us and us accepting it. They think that particularly Black people should be indebted to them. And that's my biggest problem. And a lot of other Black people feel that way, especially older Black people, not all of them. Because I don't want to throw all older Black people under the bus, but a lot of them feel like this is our only hope. Like, they ain't perfect, they ain't shit, but like, it's better than the other side. And that's a problem, because we deserve better than both of these options.
Amen. but I'm glad you brought this up, because I've been thinking about Trump and Biden in relation to COVID. We just went through one of the deadliest waves of COVID. I'm not even sure if it was the deadliest, because we don't have the tracking and the COVID infrastructure like we used to have. So we don't even know how deadly it was. But people rightfully got onto Trump when he dismantled the pandemic response team, which led to hundreds of thousands of preventable deaths in 2020, but no one talks about how Biden got rid of mask mandates and then pushed for vaccines and then got rid of the free COVID testing and finished the job that Trump started. And so these two have been working in tandem. And as a result, millions of Americans are dead, are dying, or are disabled. And right now, they actually have on their CDC website that if you have had COVID once, you need to be wearing a mask, you need to be taking safety precautions. But a lot of Americans are still convinced that it's the elderly and it's the disabled people dying. They don't think it's them. They don't think that their next infection will be their last because they'll die from it. And a lot of this, like the CDC isn't saying aloud because of, quote unquote, the economy, which is more important than us. The most important thing is that we go to work and that we buy things that we don't need so that way rich people can be richer. It's not about us surviving. It's not about us being safe. It is about money at the end of the day. It's about profit. And you pointed out the vote blue no matter who. And something that I've realized is that a lot of that is centering white comfort. At the end of the day, it doesn't matter if Trump or Biden is elected president. I remember in 2017, Mayor Lumumba, well, this was before he was mayor. He spoke at this panel I was at. And he said the day after Trump was elected president, he woke up Black in Mississippi. And I feel like that perfectly illustrates for me what it is like to be a Black person in this country. Like, it does not matter who the president is. Black Lives Matter started under Obama, a biracial president. People are still out here killing Black people. It does not matter if Trump is. And I see it so often with white liberals. They'll be like, if Trump wins, you're going to be lynched from trees. People are being lynched now. No, they have been out of pocket. They have been out of pocket because they're afraid. They're afraid and they want us to calm them down and comfort them at this time.
You know, this is just like the Pussy Pink Brigade, the pink pussy hat feminist. People that have a marginalized identity, but they're also white, like they're not thinking about, they're honestly only thinking about themselves. And they know that at the end of the day, they won't have the worst end of the stick, either way you slice it. But they know that they feel like if there's a Republican in office, they just might be a little closer to feeling what it feels like to like be a colored person in this country. Like they feel like their whiteness won't protect them as much. And I think that's what it's all about. And it's so audacious when they come for folks of color like that, specifically them, to try to like bully us and scare us. Do you not understand the people that we come from? Do you not understand? Do you know how many presidents my grandmother lived under? That my grandma is old enough, 5-6-year-old little girl having to learn about a little Black boy being lynched, having to worry about her brothers and her daddy at 5 and 6. And the presidents they lived under, some of which y'all might call the liberal or for Black people. It's audacious. It's audacious to me. They'll do all that listening and learning and DEI and all that bullshit and still have no real understanding of history. Or maybe they just don't acknowledge it. And then they say dumb shit like, y'all are going to be the reason this, that, and the other happens. And like, you're going to be fine. You're going to be fine. Either way you slice it. You're going to be a little uncomfortable, but you'll be fine. We're not going to be fine regardless of who's there. So
yeah, we're not going to be fine, which is why I'm so tired of hearing if Trump wins, we'll live in a fascist state. When right now, most Americans, Democrat and Republican, do not want Israel to get billions of taxpayer dollars. Yet the president has bypassed Congress to give billions of taxpayer dollars to Israel. We already live in a fascist state. And we're back at the illusion of choice, this idea that like, oh, if we can vote our way out of it, we can't vote our way out of this. There's no difference between Trump and Biden.
You can't have these world powers aligning with you and then expect like the people who are being oppressed to also be on your side. It never works that way. And anytime you're on the side of the empire, you're probably in the wrong. You're probably in the wrong. So there's that. That's all I got to say. All right, let's take a break.
Let's get into some ways you can support the Hoodoo Plant Mamas. One is through our bookshop, where you can buy the books that we previously discussed. We have a Hoodoo Beginner's Guide. Leah and I share our top reading picks, and we have the books from our Writing the Spirit guests. Every purchase you make helps support our show. Check us out at bookshop.org/shop/Hoodoo Plant Mamas or the link in our show notes.
Other ways you can support us include rating and reviewing the podcast on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Follow us on Twitter at Hoodoo Plants and Instagram at Hoodoo Plant Mamas. Check out our Patreon, where we share exclusive video, plant, and spiritual content for only $3 a month. If you prefer a one-time donation, you can donate via Cash App, hashtag Hoodoo Plant Mamas, or our PayPal, hoodooplantmamas@gmail.com. Let's get back to the show. So in the first part, we talked about how the U.S. government uses propaganda and what it looks like, but I kind of want to get into the why and what their end goal is. So the other day I saw this tweet from the People's Oracle, and I think it perfectly shows what this end goal is. She tweeted, "If you can be made to distrust what you see and hear and what you feel in your body, then you can be made to believe anything. Through manipulation and coercion, you become conditioned to defer your judgment to those with more power than you, whether or not they can truly be trusted." And I think the whole purpose of this is to separate you from your body, is to separate you from your intentions, is to make you completely rely on this system. So that way you think you have no power, you think you're powerless, there's nothing you can do about this, there's nothing you can do to stop it. There's the only thing that you can do is continue to invest in a system that is harming you. And that is spiritual warfare.
Again, I hate to be redundant, but it goes back to that limiting your imagination. And like what this person said, making you not trust yourself in what you see. It's not enough to like brainwash you as far as like how you see the world. But then when the walls start breaking and it's like you can't ignore it, then it's like what you see isn't real. You literally began not trusting yourself or not trusting what you feel, like bodily, like, this doesn't feel good, but I'm not supposed to complain because this is all we got. This is our only option.
I don't know if you have seen this, but what you said reminded me of it. Quiet on Set is a documentary about what happened to the Nickelodeon kids. And there were several people who said the exact same thing. They were like, this does not feel right. But I was too afraid to complain about it because I didn't want to seem like I was asking for too much. Because a lot of them were like, I felt like I should be grateful to even be here. And so it wasn't right for me to complain about it. Like these were women, and one was a Black mother who was like, it was very hard for my son to get booked, and he finally got booked. So when they were mistreating him, she actually did speak up some, but then they started to ostracize her son. So she was like, I had to stop so that way he didn't get punished for it.
I just watched that this weekend, and it makes me sad because one thing that I got, they didn't go into a lot of detail about it, but essentially a lot of parents just kind of like accepted it. Even with what happened to Drake and Josh, that could have been avoided because one parent saw, hey, this adult is being a little too touchy with my child. This adult seems to be obsessed with my child. And instead, I hate to blame a parent because obviously, you know, it's not all her fault, but the mother decided instead of for whatever reason, not listening to your ex-husband, you decided to align with the abuser who eventually, you know, was able to have free reign over abusing your child because it was all about keeping them in the business. And a lot of parents sacrificed their kids for that and just was like, we're not going to shake the table, even though this is a lot of weird and inappropriate stuff is happening. Even with those women, I actually felt the way about what those women did to keep their job. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. And I wasn't working back then. But the part where he was making those inappropriate jokes, like with stuff with the kids, they were a part of writing that. And the fact that you didn't even have like a line when it came to kids, all because you wanted to get ahead in the industry. Like, I just feel like that was peak WW behavior, like to just settle for whatever men would get you, thinking that they gonna pull you up with them, and they never do. They never do. Same thing with Black people who do it, who think bending to the will of these people is going to make them become like a good Black person in them. No, they're going to discard you at the first instance. But again, that's irrelevant. I just want to say that just in general with the with us just talking about that show, because that was wild to me, but we can move on.
I think it does make sense in this context, because I think about like what people have to give up of themselves in order to settle for something like that. And the term spirit loss, I don't know what it means exactly. I'm going to be honest. I think it means kind of like that, like you're negotiating what feels intuitive in terms of like what you think and what you believe and all these things. And you're deferring your power to somebody else. And so as a result, you start to believe like, oh, you know, yeah, degrading children is the only way for me to get ahead, or abusing privilege or abusing the power I have is the only way to do whatever. I think that's on the big level for people who have privilege. And I think for a lot of us who don't, I think a lot of it comes in the form of, I don't care. Or that doesn't affect me, especially when you see the news talk about, well, I wouldn't say news because they tend to not talk about it. When you see social media talk about the things that are going on in this world, people think that they are unaffected by it. But we are. Like right now, we are on our laptops with batteries where cobalt were mined in the Congo, where that was sent to sweatshops in China for us to get these devices that we have now. Like there are people who died for us to have the devices that we have. We are a part of the system. Something that I learned in college when I learned about what was going on in Congo and like this web of exploitation is that we are all being exploited, but we are not being exploited equally. Like for us, our data gets stolen. The companies use it to try to make us sell things. A lot of people, especially like influencers, I wouldn't even say influencers. I just saw this video of this woman who was proudly talking about this device she had and basically did months of free marketing for this company. And she's being exploited in that way because they were paying white creators to talk about it, but they refused to pay her, even though she did months and months of free marketing, got millions of views. They refused to pay her. And so she was being exploited in that way. But we don't talk about the people who are risking their lives for her to even have that device that she has. And that's how we are a part of it. We are using the result of people's dying, of people's slave labor. We're using these products.
Yeah, I think I don't care mentality or the kind of dissociation, I think a part of that is a survival tactic. I think it's in conversation or connected to the brainwashing, to kind of separating yourself from that. And being like, I'm here, that ain't got nothing to do with me. This is my life, and I can't control what's happening in the world and that kind of thing. And you can't, like, we can't control what's happening. I think the attitude of, oh well, not my problem, is what's fucked up, because it is. And I also think people in the US think we're protected in a certain way. And I think they don't realize that protection is slowly going away. Like one day it's going to be us. I do believe that. Like one day we're going to be on that same end of the stick that we try to ignore with what's happening in other countries. I mean, we're almost there. Like, I don't think people realize that there is a ridiculous amount of houseless people here. And it's going to get to the point where most people are either houseless or housing insecure, because we're almost there at this point. Most of us are a missed paycheck away from getting evicted. I know I can't miss the paycheck. I'm not going to be able to pay my rent, because one of my paychecks is not even enough. Like, a single paycheck would not be enough to pay my full rent. So I just think that living in that bubble, you're gonna hit the ground much harder than the people that are recognizing what's happening, and that at any moment this could happen to us.
I think that's a lot of it. People don't think that this could happen to us. They think because of the U.S. military, nobody would ever dare attack us. I think our biggest threat right now is the U.S. military, is the fact that all of this money is going to policing, is the fact that like a lot of money is also going into surveillancing, which is where masks come in again, because they also help protect you from surveillancing. I think that we are looking at the wrong people as being our enemies. I think we keep looking for someone outside of the U.S. to attack us and not our own government. That's one. And then two, I really want to remind people, nobody is coming to save us. Nobody is coming. No military is going to come and try to save us. And so when we sanction the actions that are happening to other innocent people and be like, oh, you know, it's the fault of their government, we are also sanctioning for other countries to do that to us.
I've seen this TikTok recently. I have not been on TikTok because it's super addictive and I fall down a rabbit hole, but I've seen it on Instagram where this person talked about how their theory is the reason all these cop cities are popping up all over the country is because they are trying to prepare for an uprising, because they know, like, they know what's happening and they are preparing it for like riot control. Basically, that's why they're militarizing the police in this extreme way. I think it goes back to what you said about them being our biggest threat. And also, listen, I know conspiracy theorists, but like realistically, I don't take it too far. The earth is not flat. There's a reason all these billionaires have bunkers. Like, that is actually not a conspiracy. Them niggas got bunkers under their houses because they know that they are fucking killing the planet. They know that the wealth gap is becoming huge, and that there is, it's getting to the point where I think it was designed to be that way for people, most people to be poor or working class, but it's getting to the point where it's going to get extreme and most people are going to be on the extreme end of the spectrum. And then you're going to have this small minority of people that are steadily getting all the wealth to the point where it's like the people can't take it anymore. I actually think that that person has a point. At this point, I think it's pretty blatant, because where the fuck, like when you really sit down and think about it, where the fuck did this idea come from? Like, why did y'all decide that we needed cop cities? Like, we needed this all over the country. It's not about trying to make people safer. So they know something that we don't know, or maybe they're prepared for what they know is gonna happen if things keep going the way they're going. So a while back, a tweet went viral, I guess, because it started on Twitter and then I saw people steadily sharing it on Instagram, where it was like, the revolution will need social skills, something around that, those lines, about basically saying, if you don't have social skills, you can't organize people, you can't be a part of the revolution. And I kept trying to figure out like why it bothered me. And at first I was like, oh, maybe it's personal because I have social anxiety. But then I was thinking about, as a person who is very interested in cults and just like the psychology of that, one of the most common aspects of cult leaders is that they're charismatic. They know how to talk to people. They're considered quote unquote well-spoken, and people trust them, and people are less likely to listen to the person who, even if this person has good ideas, this person can organize people. If they don't have the look, if they stutter, or they don't seem, if they don't speak well as other people, then people don't trust them. It's just like how I forget the guy's name that helped with the Amazon boycott, where the people in power tried to comfort him because of how he spoke and how he dressed and how he looked, because so they tried to make him the face in thinking that like, oh, nobody's going to take him seriously. And then it was successful because people assume that you have to have a certain look, a certain way of talking, and a certain way of being in order to get through to people. And that's mostly true. That's why people are able to get on social media and speak with so much authority about complete bullshit. And I also think about a person, particularly Sean King, who just will not go away. Like, there are people I follow, like I am connected with on social media, that still follow him. And I can't for the life of me understand. People were so quick to get Rachel Dolezal out of here. And even though people have been steadily saying that this is a white man, somehow nobody is buying it, or people are saying, who cares? He's done more for Black people than da 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 da. Although he's been accused of like stealing money, he's been accused of mistreating Black women. Who cares? Y'all are actually treating him like a white man, because I ain't never seen a Black man get away with this much. Like, don't get me wrong, they done got away with stuff, but this is ridiculous. Sean King and these other activists that have been called out for being scammers or people that's only out for money, they talk really well. They have powerful voices. They are charismatic. They know how to move people and keep people feeling it and all of that stuff. And yet, has anybody asked if they're a good person? Like, is this person for the community?
A lot of the pushback I've seen for the whole, like, you need social skills for the revolution, it's mainly come from, like, people who struggle with social skills. One, I saw this morning, they're a Black autistic queer person, and they push back against this because they're like, I would love to be in community with my neighbors, but their neighbors could be racist, ableist, and or queerphobic, and so it will require them to do the additional work of educating their neighbors to be able to tolerate them when they have to focus on their survival. And so it's like, they're not able to focus on getting their needs met, because they have to push that aside to help out these white people. And so what they were saying is that it is not too much for them to ask to be in community with people who have already done the work necessary to be a part of a community with people of differing backgrounds. So that's one. Two, this reminded me of this study on the myth of the alpha male. And how it, I want to say it was in the 70s, there were these white men who did this research on this group of deer, and they assumed that the biggest deer was the alpha of the pack because everybody would follow him. And it wasn't until a few decades later that this study was redone with women, that the women saw that the group of deer, they would move their head in different directions, and then the largest deer would go in the direction where most of that group went. And so the biggest deer was not the alpha of the group. He was the representative, and the group moved based on consensus. And so that's how nature works. There are a few other types of animals that also do this sort of thing. And I feel like the government has hijacked this, where they told us that we are going to vote for people to represent us. And that's the dream. But most of us don't feel represented. There are women in Congress. Yes, there are Black people in Congress, but they're bullied, and their choices are to either fall in line or be ostracized. For a lot of us, it's just not enough. And I think it's not enough, and it'll never be enough, because it was never meant for us to be in these systems. And we keep trying to fit into these boxes that colonialism has given us. We keep hoping that if we fit into it right enough, it'll help ease the foot they have on our necks. And these systems feed off of our hope. They feed off of us creating solutions for it to keep going. And that, I think, is the insidious part of this. Like, as long as we see the U.S. government as being salvageable, it continues to harm us in irreparable ways.
I like what you said about, like, as long as we see the U.S. government as salvageable, it'll continue to harm us. And, like, that's my issue. Watching the lone Palestinian woman in Congress be mistreated and bullied and degraded by her colleagues.
Her name's Rashida Tlaib.
Rashida Tlaib, yes. I kept wondering, why do they choose to be a part of this system? Like, do you really believe that this can be saved? Like, look at how these people, one of her colleagues, Major Reed, whatever that weirdo's name is, Majory. I ain't even gonna, whatever. She called her a terrorist. She called Rashida a terrorist with no repercussions. They've called Ilhan Omar, they've called her a terrorist as well. Like, I've seen that language used about her just being a traitor, or, and I just don't understand why they are putting themselves through this, because I feel like once you're in it, now you can really see. You can really see how corrupt these people are. And yet y'all are still fighting for what? I don't understand it. Maybe they have an answer. That ain't my business. But what I do believe is that they deserve better than that. You don't deserve to be working with people who literally see you as an enemy and a terrorist. Like, they don't respect you. They don't even see you as human. The fact that you got censured for saying, like, my people are dying, for aligning with your people. People on both sides went against her. This is why I say they're all the same. It's one big circle. And so I'm going to tell you right now, nobody is going to bully me into accepting or voting for Biden. I am unmoved. You can't scare me with Trump. My parents survived Reagan. My ancestors survived slavery. Y'all could go to hell. Like, that's where I am. You can't bully me into a nigga that ain't even the worst we've ever seen in this country. Pretending like Trump is the worst we have ever seen is actually, when you really look at it, he's not. He's absolutely not.
Amen. So my final thoughts is just, like, we all need to accept that to some extent we've been brainwashed, even if you call yourself, like, unlearning and doing the work. I don't think a lot of us realize just how much work we have to do and how long it's going to take. It's going to take the rest of our lives. I just get really annoyed with white liberals because they're like, oh, racism will end in our lifetime. I'm like, it's been here for centuries. It's not going to end in our lifetime. The hope is that it will end in a few centuries, but I think it's going to take this country down with it. And I'm excited. I'm excited for this country to go down. I'm nervous about what that will mean for us, because whenever white people get hurt, they like to blame it, everything on us and punish us for it. So that's what I'm nervous about.
I agree, because slavery and segregation and all of that, like, that whole thing, we haven't even been free that long, given how long slavery lasted. And then that's not even counting the Jim Crow era and having to, like, push back against these discriminatory practices. So people who believe that are, I guess that's it. Thank y'all for listening. If you like this episode, you can like, rate, and review Hoodoo Plant Mamas on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If anything from the show resonated with you, make sure you share it with us on social media. You can find us on Twitter at Hoodoo Plants and Instagram at Hoodoo Plant Mamas. Thank y'all for listening, and stay tuned for the next episode.
Bye.
Bye.